Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mutu. Welcome to Health Chat. Get this, the United States is the number one trash producing country in the world at 1,609 pounds per person. Can you imagine? That's per year. Of this trash, China used to process nearly one third of the recyclable plastic in the world, becoming which is in North America, but not anymore as its garbage ban is fully in effect as of January 1st. So we will look at what is happening on this issue. And to do that, we are joined with by Gail Barnes. She's joining us from New York. And Ms. Gail Barnes is a technology and sustainability expert who has consulted with companies worldwide on product sustainability innovation with composting and recycling strategy, as well as advising on consumer insights and evolving trends. Ms. Gail Barnes, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, it's great to talk to you.
It's really good to have you. Listen, this is a topic that we seem not to talk very often about. And I think that it's going green, the whole idea of going green. First of all, can you give us a sense of why it's important? People don't even understand what it means to some extent. So what is going green? Okay, I think we lost Ms. Gail Barnes for a second. We'll have her back in a few minutes. So again, today we will be talking about sustainability, going green, and making sure that the environment we live in is really in a good condition so that all of us species can survive. Now, before we do that, before our conversation with Ms. Gail Barnes, let's take a listen to this report by Lisa Schlein.
After all-night talks, negotiators toasted each other with champagne early Saturday to celebrate their achievement. The treaty, which has been under negotiation for 4 years, provides controls and reductions across a range of products and processes where mercury is used, released, and emitted. The treaty, known as the Minamata Convention on Mercury, is named after a city in Japan where serious health damage occurred as a result of mercury pollution in the mid-20th century. Mercury is a toxic element which occurs in nature. Just over 2,000 tons of mercury are emitted into the air from human activity every year, increasing the threat to human health and the environment. Executive Director of the United Nations Environment Program, Achim Steiner, says mercury is used widely in many sectors. It is found in the medical and pharmaceutical industries, in batteries and lighting, in everyday products, such as skin creams and soap.
And it took us a long time to both establish and understand that in expanding this use by human beings, we were creating a terrible legacy because mercury accumulates. It accumulates in the food chain through fish, for instance. It accumulates in our bodies. It is released through the burning of coal-fired power stations and travels sometimes thousands of kilometers. It affects the Inuit in Canada, just as it affects the small-scale artisanal gold miner somewhere in southern Africa.
The treaty includes measures for controlling and phasing out the use of mercury. Under the treaty, governments agree to ban the production, export, and import of a range of products containing mercury by 2020. Mercury is harmful to health. It can cause brain and neurological damage, especially among children. Other effects include kidney damage and damage to the digestive system. Victims can suffer memory loss and language impairment. UNEP says coal burning and small-scale gold mining are the major sources of mercury emissions into the air. The booming price of gold is triggering a significant growth in small-scale mining, especially in impoverished communities in Africa and Asia. Up to 15 million people work in this industry, including 3 million women and children. The head of UNEP's chemical branch, Tim Kasten, says mercury is used to separate gold from the ore-bearing rock. Unfortunately, he says, this process is very harmful to health.
So what we'd like to do is to help them understand the hazards of mercury, get them to reduce the amount of mercury they're using, either through very low technology devices that are called retorts, which is actually a way of recycling or distilling the mercury that they're using, such that they can recover between 80 and 90% of the mercury that they're using. So they can use that mercury again, so they don't have to pay for the mercury. At the same time, it's not being emitted to the air.
The treaty calls upon nations that have artisanal and small-scale gold mining operations to draw up national plans within 3 years of the treaty going into force. The aim is to reduce and, if possible, eliminate the use of mercury in such operations. The treaty will be open for signature at a special meeting in Japan in October. It will take effect after 50 countries have ratified it. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that was Lisa Schlein. And Gail Barnes, are you there?
I am indeed.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. And let me apologize to our listeners. We just had the small technical difficulties. So now we wanted to understand, there is this big notion of going green, green living. Could you give us a sense of what is going green?
Going green is all about realizing that we only have one planet. There is no planet B. And for us and for our children, if we want to breathe the air and drink the water and live healthily in the future, we really have to change when we are doing things. I heard you give, you know, the statistics for the amount of trash that is produced in the United States, 1,609 pounds per person per year. That is a crazy number. We are just consuming too much. Mm-hmm. If you think about how much plastic has been produced globally, it's 8.3 billion metric tons. Now, of that, 6.3 billion metric tons has gone to plastic waste, of which only 9% has been recycled. 79% is sitting in a landfill, or it is on the ground contaminating the earth or the water as litter. That is really, really scary. What is also scary for some folks is saying, what can I do about that? Going green can be very overwhelming. You want to make a difference to the planet. Mm-hmm. What do you do? One of the biggest obstacles is our daily habits. But if we can make just a few small changes every day, we can land up making a very big difference.
And we definitely want to get into those small steps, because a lot of people just are not informed and they don't even understand the concept of recycling. To be honest with you, I moved to the U.S. Several years ago, a long time ago. But when I was in Africa, before knowing about Europe and before knowing about the West in general, before being familiar with the life in the Western world, I was not familiar with recycling. I didn't know what recycling was. And even in living in the United States after all these years, it still takes a little effort for me to separate my trash. Like, sometimes I just mix the barrels with the plastic, with, you know, I still recycle. So I think it's a matter of education and awareness. So would you please explain what does a recycling mean and why it's important to do it?
Recycling means that you, if you're in a home, you separate, as you said, your trash into those things that can be treated in a recycling center and those that can't. For example, organic waste, potato peelings, fruit skins, things like that that can't be retreated. The thing is, in the United States, a lot of the material that would have been recycled in the past isn't being recycled right now because there is a trash ban from China. China used to process nearly one-third, as you said, of the recyclable plastic in North America. But there's been this ban since the 1st of January. So I'd like to leave listeners with the thought. And that is, if you are in a place where there is recycling and you take part in that and you know in your area what can go and what can't, that is a good thing. But don't use recycling as an excuse not to make changes yourself, mm-hmm. because it's those changes that each and every one of us does to do the right thing for the environment that is important. So, yes, as part of a holistic, you know, something that considers all the alternatives, plan to a better environment, recycling, if you are lucky and live in an area to have it, that plays a part. But better still, if you don't use it in the first place, you don't lose it. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have an expensive way to recover or recycle it. And there's a company that I've had the pleasure of working with in Israel. It's a startup started by a lady. It's called Tipa. And with their packaging, which is compostable, it is a really easy way to do the right thing. Now, you're going to say, what is compostable packaging? Well, that is packaging that you can put in with your food waste. In other words, the things that would have gone to landfill originally. So you can collect those in your home. And if you've got compostable packaging, you can put that in with your food waste. And if you've got a worm bin somewhere, you can either make compost with worms, or if you're lucky enough to have a garden or somewhere outside, you can make compost that goes back into the soil and benefits the soil. You know, it's really just like an orange peel would go back to become a nutrient in the soil again. So compostable packaging technology, mm-hmm. is a kind of composting you can think of as a kind of recycling. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of recycling where the immediate benefit is for the soil and for new plants, or if you're growing some food crops, food for the next round of crops that you're growing. So composting, I get very excited when I think about composting.
So if we were to put it simply so we can understand the basic, what is the difference between composting and recycling?
Recycling is, think about a tin can, or a plastic bottle. You put it into your recycling bin. It goes off somewhere and gets sorted. Then the plastic or the metal in the can is either broken down in some way, either with heat or chemically, mm-hmm. and then it either goes to another bottle or it goes to make something else. Now, every step of that process involves labor and it involves cost. So that's what happens. And, you know, the same thing would happen with paper too. Mm-hmm. Composting is different because you can yourself, with home compostable plastic materials, you yourself can put it in with your food waste at home and you can make a compost heap in the garden. And you can get compost. It breaks down into things that are really good for the soil, especially, for example, sugarcane is an example of a crop that really takes the goodness. It's really hard on soil. So say you've got a little bit of sugarcane you're growing. That is sucking all the goodness out of the soil. If you make compost using your own food waste and any compostable packaging materials, for example, like that from Tipa that you can find, you can use that compost and make the soil good again for your next round of sugarcane or maize or whatever it is that you plant. It means you don't have to buy fertilizer because there are so many nutrients in compost, which happens just naturally as bacteria or bugs microorganisms break down the food waste and any compostable materials in there. Now, paper is compostable. Some plastics, for example, the ones I mentioned from Tipper, those are also compostable. How do you find out if something is compostable and you want to put it in with your compost? Have a look on the back of the pack, and you should see it'll either say it's recyclable or it will say it's industrial compostable. And, of course, best of all, it would say home compostable. Then you know you can use it to make your own compost.
Oh, very interesting. Very, very interesting indeed. So this is a lot of information, and I'm trying to have it in a way that our listeners are really following, because it's so critical for us to understand why we need to take these steps and protect our environment, because that's the bottom line. We need to protect our environment so that the environment we live in takes care of us. So why is it important to... Let's talk about some of the obstacle to recycling, going back to recycling, because this is such a basic term and a basic thing that we ask people to do, but a lot of people still are not doing it. So why is it, what are some of the obstacles for people to recycle, and what can be done about it?
Some of the obstacles are that depending on where you live, you may not have access to recycling. You know, some people live in areas where there is no trash collection, for example. And if there is no separate bins in the United States, as you'll know. They're dependent, you know, once again, it depends on which state you're in. There are different bins in which you can collect the different materials, things that are recyclable and things aren't. One of the big things that is not recyclable, because it is so difficult to recycle, is any kind of flexible packaging. So any film, if you get a parcel and instead of brown paper, they have, for example, put in those air bladders that are plastic filled with air,
yes,
those cannot be recycled because basically they gum up the sorting in most municipal recycling facilities. Plastic carrier bags that you get in supermarkets. I was very interested to read the other day that Rwanda, for example, has banned those plastic bags because of the terrible, terrible litter there was. How many times have we seen a plastic bag in a pond or tangled up in a fence or stuck in the top of a tree? So recycling for flexible packaging is really, really difficult. And that's why if you have people like I mentioned, the group that I worked with, the startup in Israel called Tipper, where they are making compostable flexible packaging, that is great because it can be treated in a different way, sent back to the soil to do good. And, you know, if you are in a place where you are growing your own food, I can't overemphasize how important it is for you to learn how to compost. It will save you money and your crops will be great.
Okay, fantastic. So, Gail Barnes, we have to take a short break for the news and we'll come back and continue this very interesting discussion. It's time for the news and we'll be right back. Don't go away. This is Abigail with the news.
Drug shortages are paralyzing Angola's health service. Crippled by 27 years of civil war, health care improved after the conflict ended in 2002. But experts say the country has failed to develop a robust system for buying and distributing medicines or training doctors and nurses. Worldwide tuberculosis has been declining, but according to the World Health Organization, Angola saw a 16% rise in TB cases between 2002 and 2016. The Southern African country suffered a devastating yellow fever epidemic in 2016 with about 4,000 suspected cases and 380 deaths. Angola's new president, João Lourenço, has vowed to improve public services, particularly healthcare, which the government acknowledges suffers from a lack of doctors and medication. Kenya has agreed to accelerate a health agreement it signed with Cuba last year in bringing 100 doctors from the country to fill gaps in Kenyan hospitals. 50 Kenyan doctors will also be sent to Cuba for specialized training. The Kenyan government says the deal to import Cuban doctors would help counter gaps in Kenya's medical facilities. The agreement will also see Kenya work with Cuba on collaborative research projects, training for healthcare workers, and collaborations in fields such as genetic engineering and biotech work. But some critics say the move will not address the systemic dysfunction in Kenya's health system. And finally, a new online dating service is incorporating genetics into the mix and promising something other apps cannot: compatibility through genetics. The app is called Pheromore, a cross between pheromone, the small molecules that are emitted from the body and are smelled by the people around us, and amour, the French word for love. The US-based company competed in a recent Bay Area pitch competition where they stood out with a charismatic presentation that included references to their own failed attempts at online dating. The company claims their app is based on 40 years of research showing that there are 11 genetic markers proven by scientists to be responsible for attraction. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing the environment and sustainability and health. And that was Abigail Belay with the news. Our guest today is Gail Barnes. She is technology and sustainability expert. Now, Ms. Barnes, let's talk about what has changed over the years, especially now in 2018, when it comes to waste. What has changed, and why do, I mentioned the numbers earlier in my introduction, why do Americans need to take inventory on their approach to green living? And not just American, it's global, really.
Waste is becoming really difficult to ditch. That's it. It's got nowhere to go. It's not even on a slow boat to China. It's on a no boat to China. China is not accepting any more waste, and it's an ongoing situation. And in the light of that, Americans will need to embrace a zero waste mentality. It's going to be a necessity, not a choice.
So it is a necessity that we be mindful of our waste. So what causes so much waste? Is it because people eat a lot, or people just buy, consume? What is the problem?
One of the things I think is a need to be mindful of one's consumption. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to what you are buying, how it is packed, and can you buy it in another way which will have a lower impact on the environment? I used to be a teacher, and this, if you've got kids, this is a really, really great learning occasion you can have with your kids when you go shopping. As you buy things, to look right away on the packaging and see, is it recyclable or not? And if it isn't, you can play a game and say, okay, let's find this thing that we want to buy, and let's find if we can buy it in a way in which there is no packaging, or if there is packaging that will have a smaller footprint on the environment and won't land up as litter somewhere or won't land up in the sea. That's really, really dreadful. The amount of plastic, that there is going to be more plastic in the sea than fish by 20.
Wow. How about that for fish, going to fish? You go fishing for plastic instead of fish. Anyways, that's an interesting fact there. So what is the problem with plastic fundamentally? Because you know, you go to the grocery store, they ask you paper or plastic. What is the problem with plastic? As you mentioned, Rwanda banned plastic in the country.
It never, ever goes away. You know, 500 years is a number that I've heard used. 500 years is a crazy number. You know, that is realistically forever. Once plastic is here, it is here to stay. And if it's flexible plastic, if it's some kind of plastic bag, mm-hmm. It's functionally not recyclable. In the United States, there are some retailers that will allow you to bring back plastic bags to the retailer, and then it goes to a special facility where they can deal with it. That's putting a lot of onus on the consumer. You have to take it back. So me, I always like to run up the hills instead of run down the other side. So I'd rather stand in the supermarket and figure out, how can I buy something that I don't have to bring back? In other words, I take my own bag to the supermarket to fill up, or I choose paper. And then when I get home, I actually collect my recyclables in a paper bag, and then I take them to my recycling bin. So do the thinking up front. And for folks that have got access to the web, companies like Tipper on Twitter are very, very good to follow, at TIPACORP, because one of the things I like about reading their Twitter feed, and yes, you know, I have worked with them, but I do respect the way that they share information that is newsworthy. You want to know how to compost? They have shared. I've learned everything I know about composting a good deal recently from going through their Twitter feed. So Twitter is a great way. The U.S. Composting Council, it's U.S. Compost, COU, is another great one to follow on Twitter. If I can give your listeners one thing that will make a difference from having listened to me today, yes, it's find an easy way to do the right thing. Look when you're in a supermarket before you buy. Let your kids help you to recommend other things that you can buy. There may be a different container. You may be able to buy it loose. You may be able to bring your own container. Turn it into a game, and it'll not only be good for you, but also for them throughout their lifetimes to learn how to do the good thing from the beginning. Another thing you can do, and this is such a problem here in parks, is the litter. When you go outside, if you're walking or if you're jogging, you can do what the Swedes call plogging. Try and pick up plastic waste. It's about 4 or 5 pounds at the Environmental Protection Agency says that each of us discards here in the United States in every day in terms of plastic waste. So when you're outside, instead of playing and doing other things, pick up litter, take it to a place where it can be disposed of. If you're doing it with your kids, turn it into a game. Mm-hmm. Let's see who can pick up the most. And, of course, you know, if you're in a place where there is a deposit scheme, you can take the cans or the bottles back and
okay.
You can get...
Okay. So we have to leave it there, Ms. Brown. Thank you so much for joining us today.
And that was our guest,
Gail Barnes. She's an expert in sustainability, among other things. Thanks to all of you for listening to us today. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Vongani, Abigail Belai with the news, and engineer Skip. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
The tuned for Africa News.